The headlines: Iranian election campaigns are currently underway. The Yemeni army launches fresh retaliatory drones against Saudi air bases. And India reports over 165,000 new COVID-19 cases, the lowest daily tally since the past 1.5 months. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran is set to hold the 13th presidential election since the Islamic Revolution in less than a month. Candidates are campaigning across the country to woo voters. One topic seems to be more important for people than anything else, and that is the economy. Every candidate has outlined what he has planned in this regard.
Presidential candidate Saeed Jalili says the next administration will take a leap forward with a strong resolve and a well-planned agenda. Jalili says he will fight corruption and support domestic production to boost the economy. He also said the inflation rate will be in single digit during his tenure if he's elected to the office. Central Bank Governor Abdel Nasser Hemati says his administration's main concern will be the economy and people's livelihood. He says sanctions should be removed and relations with regional countries as well as the rest of the world should improve for the economy to heal. Reformist presidential candidate Mohsen Mehralizadeh says a competitive economy can bolster production and consequently help contain rising prices. He pledged that he will eliminate the root causes of inflation within 3 to 4 months if elected president. Mehralizadeh also says he will create 4 million jobs. Ebrahim Raisi says 70% of the country's economic potential is untapped, and by activating that part, he will be able to create 1 million jobs every year. He vowed to speed up the privatization of the economy. He also said he will expand the country's economic relations with neighbors first and the rest of the world in the next step. Alireza Zakani says his government will counter rent seekers. He vowed to use young people in his administration. Zakani says he will also increase government's monitoring of the prices. He said if he wins the June 18 election, the Americans will beg and will be forced to remove all sanctions. Mohsen Rezaei has pledged to revitalize the economy and boost people's livelihoods. He has promised to increase cash subsidies by tenfold. He says he will rein in high inflation and control the prices. Rezaei says he intends to get the country rid of poverty and discrimination and end what he calls the vicious circle of ineffective management. Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi has talked about a comprehensive plan to bring the inflation below 5%. He has pledged to neutralize the impact of sanctions. He says housing is also an important part of the economy and that he will provide housing to the low-income deciles of the society.
Moving on, the Yemeni army says it has carried out fresh retaliatory drone attacks against targets inside Saudi Arabia. Army spokesman Yahya Sari says the operation was carried out successfully and the targets were hit accurately. Sari said Qassem 2K combat drones targeted Saudi Arabia's King Khalid Air Base in the country's southwestern province of Asir. The kingdom and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. Tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, have been killed in the onslaught. Yemen says its retaliatory attacks will continue until Riyadh ends its aggression. Meanwhile, Yemen's Ansarullah movement has released a video footage of a major incursion into Saudi Arabia's border regions.
الناس في الإسلام
يا رب لك الحمد.
Yemeni media say the operation took place in the kingdom's southern region of Jizan. More than 80 Saudi soldiers and mercenaries were killed or injured, while tens were captured. The offensive is part of Yemen's retaliatory military campaign against Saudi Arabia. Yemenis have stepped up their attacks on Saudi Arabia in recent months. They say the retaliatory strikes will continue as long as Riyadh continues its airstrikes and blockade. Saudi Arabia, backed by the U.S. and other regional allies, launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015 with the aim of reinstating the friendly regime there. The objective has not been achieved, but hundreds of Yemenis have lost their lives due to the war. Political commentator Hussein al-Bukhaiti says the Yemeni army's operations inside Saudi Arabia are a show of their strength against aggressors.
I think at this moment it has been clear that Yemeni forces are able, as an example, to target one of the largest Saudi airbase, which is King Khalid Air Base in Khamis Mashid, south of Saudi Arabia. And because this base actually is the main airport that where a Saudi fighter jet used to attack Yemeni forces or to attack cities across Yemen. Since Yemenis have targeted this airbase, Saudi actually were forced to reduce its airstrikes on Yemen. They now hardly can target areas deep inside Yemen because they had to move some of their fighter jets to other airbase in central Saudi Arabia on Riyadh or another area, and that make it actually difficult for those fighter jets to reach Yemen or to reach the border. And as well, we have seen the footage that was released yesterday. Just want to add that this battle, which Yemeni army have seized more than 140 square kilometer. It happened actually months ago, but Saudi Arabia was trying to stop these footages to be released. They were directly and indirectly contacting Sana'a to stop this footage from being released, because Sana'a had actually before sent them some samples of this footage.
Meanwhile, Yemenis continue their fundraising for Palestinians in a ceremony in the capital, Sana'a. Yemenis from all walks of life once again voice their support for the Palestinian cause by donating money. Abdul Latif Al-Washali has more.
To continue supporting the Palestinian cause, Yemen Zakat Authority has organized this event to distribute cash aid among the Palestinian community in Yemen and fundraise $1.5 million to the Palestinian resistance.
Today, we are honored to launch two projects. The first one is distributing cash aid among our families and brothers from the Palestinian community. We're also donating money to support the Palestinian resistance.
The head of the Zakat Authority said the Palestinian resistance proved it is capable of standing against Israel. Yemeni said what was presented in the ceremony is part of what is coming, as Yemenis promised to support Palestinians until the liberation of their occupied lands.
There is no doubt that the amounts provided by the General Authority for Zakat are a simple contribution from the Yemeni people, who are ready to even share their food with the Palestinian people. Yemenis hope that this money will help liberate Al-Aqsa Mosque from the Israeli occupation, and we believe that the Palestinian resistance is capable of doing this.
The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, called on Yemenis to stand by Palestinians, saying they will share a living if they have to. He urged Yemenis to carry on the fundraising campaign to help Palestine.
Despite being involved in a brutal war by the Saudi-led coalition, Yemenis say they will always stand by their Palestinian brothers with everything they have, even if they have to share a living. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
People in the U.S. Capitol have staged a rally in solidarity with Palestinians following Israel's 11-day aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
For us, we need to demand the following. One, immediate, unconditional lifting of the siege on Gaza. because that is what international law requires. Second, we need to hold Israel accountable in the International Criminal Court. Netanyahu is a criminal war, committed war crimes. We need to take Israel to the International Criminal Court. Third, we need the implementation of the four Geneva Conventions. Palestinians should be protected, not demonized.
The protesters called on Israel to stop killing Palestinians and condemned it for adopting what they call apartheid policies. They also called for an end to Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories and demanded that the U.S. government stop funding the regime. Protests have been going on in different parts of the world in support of resistance against Israeli violations of Palestinian rights. 11 days of Israeli air, land, and sea assaults on Gaza killed 255 Palestinians, including 66 children. The strikes also wounded more than 1,900 people before a ceasefire went into effect on May the 21st. And the daily tally of coronavirus infections in India has hit a record low in the past 1.5 months. The country reported over 165,000 cases in the past 24 hours. The total caseload now stands at 27.9 million. Meanwhile, there were more than 3,400 new deaths from the coronavirus, bringing the overall fatalities to nearly 326,000. India is second only to the United States in terms of the numbers of infection. The spike is attributed to the spread of an aggressive new wave of the virus in the South Asian country in the past weeks. The World Health Organization says the Indian coronavirus variant has now been detected in more than 53 countries around the world. Moving on, the Afghan government has imposed a two-week lockdown on nearly half the educational centers and universities across the country as part of efforts to cope with the third wave of the COVID-19 in Afghanistan. Amin Alemi reports from Kabul.
According to Afghanistan's public health ministry, the third wave of COVID-19 is sharply spreading across the country and the government is bracing for the plight. As officials say, the government's decision to put a two-week ban on nearly half of the educational centers and universities is considered a precautionary measure to avoid further spread of the disease in the country. The public health ministry has also urged locals not to violate health protocols. However, locals here believe that attempts like this must be associated with other supportive measures by the government in order to convince ordinary people to stay at home.
Our people can't survive without government's financial support during lockdowns because poverty is widespread. Most families here can't survive if their breadwinners stay at home.
In the meantime, some others suggest that closure of educational centers and universities is not enough and that the government must put a ban on activities of all public sites such as swimming pools, wedding halls, sports clubs and even religious sites.
Confronting the third wave of COVID-19 can be fruitful only if the public and private sectors take it seriously. So all public sites, including swimming pools and wedding halls, should also be put on lockdown.
As observers say, the Afghan government will have a tough task to confront the spread of the third wave of COVID-19 pandemic due to shortage of medical equipment. This comes despite receiving millions of dollars in aid by regional and international states and bodies. Based on official figures, over 70,000 Afghan individuals have been affected by the disease so far, and some 3,000 others have also lost their lives over the past year. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Iran is set to roll out its first domestically produced COVID-19 vaccine to immunize its population against the respiratory disease. The shot, dubbed COV-Iran, is now in the third and final phase of clinical trial. Officials say the jab is estimated to have up to 90% efficacy. Saman Kujur gave us an update on that issue.
Well, according to specialists who were just at this press conference, they say that so far almost 1 million doses of Covarecat vaccine has already been produced, and it's waiting for the final results to come out and after the approval by Rwanda's health ministry. And then in almost 1 month later, soon as it gets the approval from Rwanda's health ministry, there is a capacity for production of almost 3 million more doses of this vaccine. And later on, in almost 4 months, 18 million more doses will be produced, and better say mass produced, so that the public can enjoy reception of this vaccine. According to all these health officials and also doctors and specialists, Iran's first vaccine is quite safe, effective, and according to one of Iran's health officials, it has an effectiveness of almost 90%. So this is a very good news and much satisfactory news for all Iranians and even non-Iranians who will receive Iran's vaccine in the future, because as you know, Iran is working on to meet domestic needs, and at the same time it's working on the capacity to increase the extra production to export its extra productions to outside, to export and also to meet the needs of other countries, especially regional countries. So Iran will soon become a hub for COVID-19 vaccines in the world, and this is only with reliance on its own specialists. And at the same time, we should say that such a vaccine, an effective vaccine, is already being developed at a time that we are having we are under toughest sanctions for almost years, many years now.
With that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back to Aperture. We looked into the life of Muhammad Iqbal from his birthplace in Punjab province of British India, now in Pakistan, to his academic studies in the University of Cambridge. Iqbal was a very learned man who is known for his political ideologies and philosophical theories. He is fondly remembered as a great poet and scholar. The political content of Muhammad Iqbal's poetry is one of the most fascinating aspects of his work. Except for a few poems, his entire poetic endeavor is tinged with the political concerns of his time. Both domestic and international political events shaped his poetry. He not only responded to political events in his verse, but also inspired his fellow Indian Muslims through his poetry to find a way out of the political dilemma in which the British colonial rule had put them. Stay with us as we looked into how Iqbal helped his fellow Indian Muslims aspire to a better future and guided them on the road to freedom.
Iqbal's message is addressed only to the youth. He calls them Royal Falcons. As held by Iqbal, the Royal Falcon has five characteristics. Iqbal wants the youth to catch hold of Falcon's characteristics as much as possible. The five good attributes of the Royal Falcon, as seen by Iqbal, are flying high. So Iqbal wants the youth to fly high for sure. The second attribute is keen eyesight. The youth can fly high only if they have keen eyesight. Its third attribute is that it does not build a nest, nor does it follow richness. The fourth attribute, it loves solitude, as it is a source of creativity. The last attribute, as told by Abal of the Royal Falcon, is it does not eat the prey hunted by others. Iqbal wants the youth to show these five attributes.
Allama's poetry consists of certain periods.
His poetry was at first as the poetry of the day. He would say at that time, "My Urdu poems are like a building made of clay." Little by little, his Persian poems came into existence. Among the first Persian poems were the familiar secrets and the mysteries of rapture. Such poems end with Javed Name, or perhaps with "What can be done, O Eastern people?"
Gradually, Iqbal changes from a national poet to the poet of the Islamic world. His versified story, "The Familiar Secrets and the Mysteries of Rapture," is first translated into English by Reynold Nicholson and published in the region. Years later, his Javedname is translated into German and Turkish in 1957 by those who study Islam, including Anna Marie Schimmel. The book is published in Munich, Hermann Hesse. The German writer and a winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature writes an introduction to Javedname, as requested by the translator. Hesse writes, "Sir Muhammad Iqbal belongs to three intellectual domains. His works are the outcome of these three intellectual domains: Indian intellectual domain, spiritual domain, and Western thoughts domain."
There are three groups of Persian poets. The first, those who are absolutely meaning-oriented.
Iqbal, as a poet, is highly accomplished. He has bridged the gap between wisdom and heart.
The second, those who are pedantic. Meaning is absent in their poems. They pay attention to words and nothing more.
His poems touch the reader's sensations because they are so meaningful and precede even the thoughts forming in their minds.
The third, those whose poems are full of both words and meanings. From among them, we can name Hafez and Saadi.
Such senses calm mind, imagination, and consequently heart. This is a rare attribute seen in such great poets as Hafez and Rumi. The attribute is common in all Iqbal's poems.
Allama Iqbal has mastery not only over words, but also over various meanings. Meanings which come out of him and are derived from his thoughts. His meaning-oriented poems outnumber his other types of poems, just as Rumi's. Iqbal says, "There is no comparison between the melody and me. Speaking is only a pretext. I am pulling the camel, which has no rein."
Allama Iqbal, with a faith in Islam and a reasonable Gnostic faith indicating his deep certitude in God's sovereignty, moves his mind to search for secrets and mysteries of the creation. In his Islamic Gnostic poems, and such verified stories as The Souvenir of Hijaz, the Eastern message, the familiar secrets and the mysteries of rapture. He talks about the principles of internal ontology of things and idealization of the existential world. While his thoughts are at the height of their powers, he invites Muslims to solidify familiar philosophy exactly in accordance to monotheism, to bring about a new perspective, a new worldview into the Islamic world.
So many memories are related to this house. My father came to live in this house when he was 11. Now, what sort of memory do you want me to tell you? Talking about Iqbal's thoughts reminds us of the familiar thoughts as his central train of thought. We hear Iqbal saying, to a mullah, a denier of God is an unbeliever. To me, more unbeliever is he who denies his own self.
Just ask, what is Iqbal's philosophy? The answer is, the philosophy of your own. Iqbal's philosophy is in fact the philosophy of one's own, or familiar philosophy. What is familiar philosophy? That you know your origin very well.
Never in my life have I been interested in the world's wealth or posts. I built this very house just to accept my wife's repeated requests. My wife's fate in this house had a different form. Here became a safe place for those in search of their identity. I clearly saw that most Muslims in the motherland had lost their Islamic identity, and to regain it, they need to struggle hard. The house, quiet corner, became a place for those who wish to fly thoughts of self-belief, something much needed by all.
The house originally belonged to my father, Javed Iqbal. The house title deed had already been issued to my grandmother. Upon the death of my grandmother, the deed was transferred to my father. Allama Iqbal would live here as my father's tenant. He paid the rent to my father every month or every 3 months.
Never did I lose my interest in my native lands, people. My best time was when I was among people to see them struggle hard to earn their living. I was inspired by their uproar in the Anarkli district. Loftier than the heavens is the station of man, and the beginning of education is respect for man.
Iqbal lays heavy emphasis on the familiar secrets and mysteries of rapture. Familiarity, as seen by Gnostics, means to entertain the self, to fully know the self. It's a famous statement that knowing the self is meant knowing God. Iqbal emphasized, first and foremost, returning to the self. Search within yourself in order to know the self.
Iqbal invites us to know ourselves before doing anything else. Anything else. We shall heighten ourselves to become a human being, par excellence.
From God's own being, the self got a being so. From God's own show, to self he gave a show. About this shining pearl, I know not where. It could be then without a river there.
Iqbal meant to look carefully at human beings on the one hand, and to look carefully at Islamic ideology on the other hand. For that very reason, we see Iqbal describing in detail the Eastern society and the essence of Islamic thought.
Who is a selected man? A selected man is the one who is searched for by God. He is in a form desired by God. God wants that kind of human being. This is possible only if man searches for himself, to train himself in a desirable way, to
maintain the self, to try hard to fully understand the self. This way finally leads to knowing well the Supreme Being.
The greatest message of Iqbal, as expressed in his poems, is to know yourself, to turn to your own self, to know the East, not the West.
Signs of going senile can be seen very easily in me. The tick-tock of the clock shows clearly the passage of my life. So quickly pass opportunities. So little time have I to reach the end of the line. Oh, the memory of those days when time's sword was allied with the strength of our hands and unveiled the face of truth. Our nails tore loose the knot of this world. Our bowing in prayer gave blessings to the earth. From the jar of truth we made rosy wine gush forth. We charged against the ancient taverns.
इस घर की तामीर हमारी दादी की ख्वाहिश पे की गई थी पर वो इस घर में
सिर्फ This house was built under my grandmother's wish.
उनकी यहां पे बीमार
But only for 2 or 3 days she lived here.
उसके दिन वो फात पा गई. उसके बाद
She was sick when they carried her in a car. But she survived only for 2 or 3 days.
मेरे वालिद तब 11 साल के थे जब उनकी वालिदा
फौत At the age of 11 my father lost his mother. When my aunt was about 6 years old.
मामूल बना लिया था कि वो दोनों बच्चे वालिद और
My father and my aunt would come here every day to see Alama who was lying on this bed. Alama called them and my aunt would come up to Alama and my father would sit on the other side of the bed. This way Alama would feel comfortable.
लेट जाती थी अलामा साहब के इस तरह वालिद लेट जाते थे
मैं उनके चली जाती थी शाम के वक्त शाम होनी तो स्कूल से आके
I usually went to see them after school.
मैंने तो उनको इसी आदत
Alama was always lying on his bed and resting.
मैं पास जाके लेट जाती थी तो वहीं पे सारे मेहमान
I was always beside him.
हर वक्त लोगों का
Other people would also go there.
मिलना मिलाना مسلسل جاری رہتا تھا
اس گھر میں کئی لوگ علامہ کو ملنے آ چکے ہیں قائد اعظم محمد علی جناح
Many came here to see him. Among them, General Muhammad Ali Jinnah, Jawahar Lal Nehru, Muhammad Ali Jawahar, and many other intimate friends of Allama.
علامہ صاحب اپنے بستر پہ بیٹھتے تھے اور
They would come here just before or after midday to have a chat with Allama about topics like poetry, philosophy, or any other things.
تو یہ علامہ کی زندگی
علامہ spent his last days of life here
وہ اس گھر میں گزرا
I was well aware that the main reason why India went under the yoke of British colonization was lack of knowledge of self and reliance on others self-awareness springs out self-dependence and internal richness know yourself Know your hidden parts, nurture your parts, and create a new world, which will compensate for old shortcomings and soul defects, to pave the way for comprehensive development. It is the self which originates existence. It is self-awareness which gives birth to human values. It is the self which affects existence. What human beings see or intuit is a manifestation of the self through mysteries. The form of existence is an effect of the self. Whatsoever thou seest is a secret of the self.
Iqbal's philosophy is objective and tangible. He pulls down philosophy from the metaphysical world to make it tangible and applicable to common people. Iqbal's philosophy is therefore a practical philosophy. It can be put into practice.
O Muslims, you have to preserve your own self. You must follow God and His book. the Holy Quran. When you achieve success in making your own self, you can resist even the whole world. No one can harm you. What is the basis of survival? Survival is based on making your own self. It is the self, the nature mentioned by Quran. And this is the essence of Iqbal's thoughts. This is what Iqbal means of the concept of self. For that very reason, every member of the Islamic world should know this way of thinking, personally and socially.
Today we see a group of ignorant people who commit, under the name of Islam, the most heinous acts, though they are all against Islamic teachings. In fact, they are all Satan's companions and toys in the hands of those who want to mislead them. About these people, Iqbal says, Europe very well knows how to secure interests, while granting to this takes a loan of that. It gives sustenance to Satan in a way that leaves perplexed even God.
Nowadays, there are calculated plots against Islam. The enemy is very active to destroy the Islamic world from within. I personally think that we need Iqbal's ideas about Islam now more than ever before. You are simultaneously a learned man, a Sayyid, a descendant of the Prophet. But tell me, are you a Muslim too?
A Muslim is called infidel by another Muslim. It is not a non-Muslim who calls him infidel. It is a Muslim. All problems are created and spread here and there by those who are pursuing only their own interests.
The phrase which brings unity to you all is, there is no God but Allah. As Iqbal says, the key to our unity, salvation, and survival, and a sign of familiarity, is in this phrase, there is no God but Allah. Those who follow this phrase never behead Muslims. Iqbal's basic philosophy is that all of us should be unified. All of us should form one single family. Muslims should get unified to guard the sanctuary. I mean Muslims from the Nile shores to the city of Kashgar.
Iqbal tells us to put aside personal interests and to move into a direction leading to social interests. Put aside your personal interests. Let's talk about our religion, our unity. We will end in success. Just because of his thoughts, Iqbal is living on today. I think so.
Just have a look at the tragic events caused by a group of people who are Muslims in name only, as if there has never been a person like Iqbal. His philosophy has sunk into oblivion, as if Iqbal never lived among us. This is a great sorrow, casting a shadow over all Iqbal's philosophy and thoughts. There is no memory of him anymore. The light of all his great books has gone out. The Everlasting Letter, The Familiar Secrets, The Secrets of Rapture, The Persian Psalms, What Can Be Done, O People of the East, The Route of Philosophy in Iran, The Eastern Message, and Reconstructing Islamic Religious Thoughts. During his last days, Allama says, As Iran, full of unknown meaning, I am unable to endure censurers' sayings. Neither have I any option, nor am I coerced. I am but a living soil, always in revolution.
Then came the last night of Allama's life. His two children came to have their last look at him. Allama was still conscious. Someone from Germany had come to see him, a friend of his or his teacher. The German called the two children and hugged them.
My father was leaving the room, but my aunt wasn't. She wanted to stay with him for a while.
At the time, I felt I had to stay with Alame and to sit there motionlessly. Our tutor, Aunt Doris, came there to take me with her. I told her, I will stay here at least for a while.
Alame told the tutor,
she knows that this is the last meeting between the father and the daughter. That is why she doesn't want to leave. Let her stay.
She knows this is the last time she sees her father.
And finally, I felt something was going to happen. For that very reason, I didn't want to leave the place.
Early in the morning, Alame passed away. The muezzin was calling out the morning adhan. Here, beside this bed, was standing his close friend, Ali Bakhsh. There were some other friends too, although most of them were saying their morning prayers at the mosque at that time. Back then, the mosque was more like a house than anything else. Friends were there to say their prayers in congregation. After their prayers, Alame passed away. His last words were the two testimonies. Then his soul flew to the sky. I personally suppose people like Alame will come to this world several centuries later.
Alame Abbal Lahori died at the age of 61 on April 21, 1938, after a life of diligence and hard work. In the last moments of his life, he put his hand on his chest, telling Ali Bakhsh, his man, "I have a pain here." And upon uttering this ambiguous, meaningful remark, he bade farewell to the world. Many attended his funeral and accompanied him to his final resting place next to Masjid-e-Shah in Lahore. On his deathbed, Alame composed this song. Does a song gone come back again? No. Does a breeze come from Hijaz? No. There finally came to an end all those days of poverty. Does a Gnostic come back a second time? No. Alame's thoughts and philosophy will remain with us forever, only if we follow him.
Iqbal was a significant voice in the traumatic history of colonized India. His sensitivity to the plight of his people was sharpened both by his understanding of his roots and his adaptability to the demands of the new colonized world. Politics and philosophy were combined in Iqbal's poetry. Perhaps today, Iqbal's anti-colonial stance can be referred to as neo-colonialism is still plaguing the world. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to our program For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, today we are going to discuss an important issue about religious education. Religious education is an important concept and a very important aspect of Islam. And of course, religion is not only about praying, about fasting, about performing Hajj, but it's also about educating and nurturing human beings and creating a positive and instructive atmosphere whereby individuals who can live together peacefully, because human beings are social creatures and they cannot live separately from one another. They live together, they interact with one another, and therefore they should know how to deal with one another, how to interact with one another. In today's society, of course, a lot of emphasis is placed, unfortunately, on secular education. We know for sure that many countries around the world provide only secular education to their kids and to the people, to the schoolers, and to those who seek knowledge. For example, a child is pushed to strive for excellence in academics. A college or university education is a necessity. There is no doubt about it, both for boys and girls. Education is very much important. But the important question, the important point is that the significance of religious education for a balanced personality must not be overlooked. We need both secular education and, of course, religious education. I could say that education in and of itself is not secular. It is always religious. Because seeking knowledge, what kind of knowledge, whatever that kind of knowledge may be, it is essential. It is kind of collective obligation, whether it is about becoming a dentist or an engineer or someone. This may be termed as secular education, but it's not secular in its essence. Because Islam also emphasizes on acquiring these skills. As long as there is a need for any skill in the society, we have to try to acquire those skills, learn them, and of course help our society. But religious education, when we talk about religious education in its specific meaning, we mean education based on Islamic standards, religious values, Islamic doctrines. In modern world, we see that the world in which we are living is producing a generation that knows a lot, but is, of course, greatly deficient in moral and spiritual values. Today's human beings have conquered the space. They have conquered even some planets. For example, they have gone to the moon and they have set foot. They have gone to the Mars. At least they have sent satellites to those places and they have discovered many, many planets and stars and Milky Ways. They have made remarkable achievements in when it comes to discovering the space. But they have marginalized, sidelined, or overlooked moral and spiritual values to a large extent.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered.
guess it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
For example, in modern time we see that children are brought up without any understanding of religion, without any understanding of moral values and moral doctrines. But according to Islam, parents have been given the noble duty of guiding the future generation. It is their task to ensure that their children get a sound religious education. Obviously, nurturing is an important duty of parents. Nurturing. Providing religious education is an important responsibility of parents. In this, of course, they are carrying the work of the prophets who guided the people. What was the responsibility of the prophets? The prophet's responsibility was also to guide human beings to the right path, to provide religious education. That was their duty. And of course, it's also the duty of the parents. And that's why I'm saying that parents are carrying on the work of the prophets. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا قُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ وَأَهْلِيكُمْ نَارًا وَقُودُهَا النَّاسُ وَالْحِجَارَةُ. O you who believe, save yourselves and your families from a fire whose fuel is man and stones. Chapter 66, verse 6. Now, this is a warning given to the families, to the parents especially, and to those who believe, that it is your responsibility to protect not only yourselves, but also your families. And to protect from what? Protect from hellfire. Okay. Now, let's remember that nurturing begins right from the time of conception, when a woman conceives. And then nurturing continues until a child's character and personality is shaped. Therefore, it is important for a mother, for a father, what the mother eats and what the father brings home, what the mother sees and what she does not see, and who she interacts with. She should purify her soul, she should purify her inner self. She should avoid eating haram morsel of food. A morsel of haram food will definitely destroy one's efforts to educate his or her child according to Islamic and religious values and doctrines. What the father brings home is very important. It should be something halal, something pure, something allowable. If he brings, God forbid, something which is haram, for example, if he has earned something by way of haram means, and he brings it home and gives it to his children, it will have a lasting impact on his family and on his children. I said that whatever efforts he makes, if he brings something haram for his family to consume, all his efforts to educate his children according to Islamic values and doctrines will be null and void. What exactly is meant by religious education? We shall discuss this with some evidence, with some elements of religious education in the following episode. Obviously, the goal of religious education is to introduce and train good human beings and introduce good human beings to the society. And inshallah, we will discuss these in the following episode. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. So I need. So I need. All I need. All I need.
All I need. To be all I need.
And I know.
what you mean to me.
Cause your love is so lovely to be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.